To get good at any one skill, asking questions, listening, having dialogical conversations about strategies, you probably have to practice it at least 10 times. You know, you wouldn't have a sports team where they have a workshop on how to make the plays happen, or how to shoot free throws, or what the breakout play is for hockey. You would practice it over and over again until you can do it without thinking. But we seem to think, well, we can just tell people what to do and they can do it. I'm Jim Knight, co-founder of the Instructional Coaching Group, and you're listening to Coaching Conversations, where I talk with coaching experts from around the world so that all of us can learn better ways to make an unmistakably positive impact on the people around us.
Hi, everyone. It's ICG consultant Jessica Wise, host of the Coaching Questions on the Coaching Conversations podcast with Jim Knight. Are you interested in learning about tools and resources to build and maintain a successful instructional coaching program? If so, join our Instructional Coaching Institute, designed for instructional coaches and administrators. In this 16-week course led by Jim Knight, you'll learn how to establish a proven foundation for success, develop a deeper and complete understanding of the coaching process and practices, and cultivate necessary communication skills for healthy conversations. We will also explore engagement in the classroom and coaching tools and resources. Learn more by visiting instructionalcoaching.com. I look forward to seeing you at the Institute. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Coaching Questions Show on the Coaching Conversations podcast with Jim Knight. This show is for everyone that calls the Instructional Coaching Group home for all your instructional coaching content. These episodes are designed for everyone who desires to think and learn alongside Jim as you continue to make an impact with all the great work you do. I'm Jessica Wise, a consultant with the Instructional Coaching Group. Today, I'll be asking Jim about his new article titled The Problem of Nominal Change, where he talks about change in education and how we can get out of the nominal change cycle. So, on with the show. Hi, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing great. Excited to have this conversation.
I am as well. I always enjoy reading your new articles, and this one was especially relevant. So I'm really excited to talk to you today.
Great.
All right. Well, today we're talking about nominal change, a topic you've recently written about and everyone can find. To begin our conversation today, I wondered if you could share what you mean by nominal change and why is this something we should be talking about in education?
Well, I have this old big dictionary, the Oxford English Dictionary, and there's one that is like 20 volumes large. And but when I was a university student, you could get a version of the Oxford English Dictionary where they shrunk down the pages to like eight pages on one page in this really skinny, you have to read it with a magnifying glass. So I looked up nominal in using my magnifying glass to read the pages. And the Oxford English Dictionary says that nominal exists in name only, merely names stated or expressed without reference to reality or fact. So when we talk about nominal change, we're saying we're doing something, but we're not actually doing it. So we could be saying we're doing differentiated instruction or PLCs or instructional coaching. But in reality, all we're really doing is saying we're doing it. We're not really doing it. And I see too often and frequently that what's happening is we're saying we're doing coaching or PLCs or whatever it might be, but it's not actually happening. What's really happening, for example, a coach actually doesn't actually do coaching. When they code how they use their time, less than 10% of it, sometimes 0% of their time is actually spent on coaching. So that's what got me interested in this concept. It's in name only.
That's interesting. And even as you talk, I think back to all the things as an educator, as a coach, as a parent, as a human that I say I'm doing, but am I really doing it? So this has really got me thinking. I wonder, Jim, though, can you give us an example of a nominal change and how it might show up in a school?
Sure. I think it shows up in all kinds of different ways. Whenever you have some kind of program or innovation or intervention that needs to happen. But I remember I was at a meeting once and was with a principal who really liked Rick DeFore's work on professional learning communities. And she said, we're going to create professional learning communities in our school. And so she invited all the teachers to come to school at Styx instead of when they ordinarily would come. And then the very first thing she said, okay, now we need to create norms. So I created some. Are these the way the norms should be? And so there was no time set aside for it. There was no skill development. There was no real understanding of what a PLC could be and how those norms would be co-constructed by the team. And nobody was into it. There was no sense in which the professionals were engaged. And that's the way it works. Or someone says they're doing differentiated instruction, but really nothing's really changing except you have a conversation about the kids, but there isn't real deep change. So that's what it looks like to me.
What do you think leads people to those challenges?
Yeah, I think one of it's systemic and one of it's psychological. I think the systemic one is people are just so busy. You know, most people in charge of schools, they don't have enough resources to accomplish what they need to do. They're supposed to do 10 things in the time they've got to do 3. They're always rushing. And then their job, if you're an administrator, you know, there's a parent who's mad because their son didn't get to be the starting quarterback, and that's going to be a 2-hour conversation, or somebody upset about the food in the cafeteria, or whatever it is. The principal's always putting out fires, always busy. And so to make it happen, time has to be set aside, time and resources to make an innovation. It doesn't happen by chance. Just can't throw it together. Somebody has to make it happen. And then the second thing, the psychological part, and I'm sure there's more to it than this, but the psychological part is we like new things. You know, sometimes we call it shiny object syndrome. You know, we like to do the new. It's way more fun to come up with a new idea than it is to do the grunt work of figuring out, okay, when's it going to happen? How are we going to do it? Let's break down. Have we got a really clear success criteria for our project? Who's going to take on the first task? When's it going to happen? Things are a lot more fun when they're just in the idea stage and not in the practical stage. So I think it's systemic. And I think we really need to think about the systemic part, because if we want the schools we want for our kids, people need the time and support to be able to make real change happen. It can't just be a little add-on thing. It can't be superficial. It has to go deep. And so I think systemically, we need to advocate for opportunities for administrators to do the work that needs to be done. And then psychologically, we have to remind ourselves, if you don't go deep, it doesn't happen.
That's right. So 2 big challenges is time. And you're right. I think of doctors, too, when you say that principals are always putting out fires. I remember sitting in my classroom waiting for my principal to show up, and she was supposed to be doing an observation, didn't come. And I'm sure I had mind chatter, like, she's supposed to be here. Where is she? Ended up that she was helping a student who had run away from the school, and they were working with the SRO, the school resource officer, to make sure that child got back safely. They're constantly putting out fires. You're right. And then that second challenge of psychological. So as you talk about these systemic challenges, what are some ways that people can get out of the nominal change cycle?
Yeah, I just want to talk about that cycle a little bit first. So the idea is that we latch on to something new. Maybe it's understanding by design, or it's differentiated instruction, or it's formative assessment, or whatever it might be. We latch onto this thing we want to do. And then we're kind of poor on resources. And so there isn't really coaching or something to follow up. There isn't really a plan. There isn't somebody in charge. And so it gets implemented poorly. And then it doesn't show results. And so, well, that didn't work. Let's pick something else new. And so we go back and we come back with some other new thing. All things that if implemented effectively would make a big difference. But we're constantly in this cycle so the teachers just say, this too shall pass.
Hello, listeners. It's ICG consultant Jessica Wise, and I want to invite you to join Jim Knight and the Instructional Coaching Group team at this year's Teaching, Learning, Coaching Conference in New Orleans. If you are looking to learn, practice, reflect, and grow your craft, the TLC conference is the place to be. Whether you join us in person or online, you'll experience meaningful keynotes, powerful breakouts, and time to network and invest in human connection with like-minded educators. Join us October 27th through the 29th as we gather to empower passionate educators to keep kids first. Visit instructionalcoaching.com/TLC-2024. I hope to see you there.
In fact, I work with a coach in Lander, Wyoming, and she wasn't from Lander, I don't think. She was just from another part of Wyoming, but she came up to me and she said, you wouldn't believe what this teacher said to me. I said, what's that? She said, you too shall pass, which is kind of a bummer thing to say, but nonetheless, but people just, the more you go through the cycle of trying something new, implementing it poorly, rejecting it, trying it something new, every time you go through that cycle, people get less and less enthusiastic about change. So to address it, I came up with these 7 things. So One of them is the old idea to begin with the end in mind. I just talked to Jim Marshall about, he's really a world's leading, one of the world's leading experts on implementation science, and he's one of our podcasts coming up. But he said, you have to get clear on what it is you want to see happen. What's your success criteria, as John Hattie would say. So if things go the way we want them to do, what would it be looking like? Another thing that I learned from Jim, which was kind of validating because I'd written this article before I talked to him, is to have a champion, to have someone who's in charge of the initiative. Someone needs to be the person who makes it happen, who evaluates what happens and helps with organizational learning about what's working and what's not working. Someone who's got the energy and the emotional intelligence to make it happen. Without a champion, it's not going to likely happen. So let's say coaching, for example. If you don't have a champion for coaching who's going to be responsible for making sure the coaches learn the knowledge, skills, beliefs, and coaching cycle they need to learn, it's just not going to happen. You have to have someone who's driven and who has the support they need to be able to make it happen. And then this is something I learned from you. I call it adding by subtracting, but I thought one of the wisest things you've taught me in these conversations is the idea of how when you were trying to decide if you should do a dissertation, you set aside certain time in your day, which was your dissertation time. And so I think it was 3 hours twice or three times a week, and this is my dissertation time. And I think if we're really wise in how we use our time, we would do what you would do. And we would say, okay, if this initiative is going to happen, here's the time I'm going to set aside to do that. But to create that time, I have to take other things off my plate, which means I have to go back. If I'm a principal, I have to go back to whomever it is I report to and say, look, here's what I want to do. Here's the time it's going to take. Do I really have to come to these meetings or can I skip these meetings? And can you just send me an email that describes it? Or can I take this part of what I'm doing out of what I'm doing and focus on this? Or can I give my responsibilities, if you happen to have an assistant principal, to an assistant principal so I can focus on this? Or how can I make it happen? But a big part of making it happen, I think, is to add by subtraction, cutting things out. Fourth thing is to ensure people have deep knowledge. And you can see this in all kinds of ways, but sometimes it's there in the curriculum. When you're bringing together the curriculum with teachers, they don't have the time to do the deep work of figuring it out. It's not that they don't want to know. It is kind of hard work. It is kind of unpleasant to scrunch up your brain and say, okay, if we answer that guiding question, what would it actually look like? But we would say, You have to do the hard work of going deep. And when it comes to curriculum, for example, we think you have to develop guiding questions that what we call specific proficiencies and formative assessments. So you as a teacher really understand what you're doing and you understand what's most important in the content and you've had the time. It might take you 5 days to go through curriculum really deeply and understand it. And then you're getting formative assessment to see if the kids are actually learning it. And so time has to be set aside to develop deep knowledge. A coach has to understand the beliefs, the skills, the coaching cycle, the knowledge around gathering data and teaching practices. And you know, if a coach doesn't know what their strategies are, if they don't have a clear coaching cycle, and then they really have to practice those skills over and over again to get good at any one skill. Asking questions, listening, having dialogical conversations about strategies, you probably have to practice it at least 10 times. You know, you wouldn't have a sports team where they have a workshop on how to make the plays happen or how to shoot free throws or what the breakout play is for hockey. You would practice it over and over again until you can do it without thinking. But we seem to think, well, we can just tell people what to do and they can do it. So those are some of the things. I've got a few others, but those are some of the things that I talked about.
Thank you, Jim. I think back to when I started coaching, Jim, and I thought I was coaching. If you had asked me, what am I doing? I am coaching. But I think that I was living through this nominal change cycle. If I got a little bit of information on coaching and I thought I was doing it, I was just walking up and down hallways, just telling people what to do. So I was doing parts of coaching, meeting with teachers, being a part of their classrooms, but I really wasn't committing time to have deep knowledge, to have a champion that could support me through it and help guide me. So I'm thinking back to all those times when maybe I was in the nominal change cycle. And one particular idea that you shared in your article that struck me was the ensure deep knowledge. It made me think of learning communities within schools, how schools or teams can spend time learning together during meetings, and that without learning, there's a risk of false clarity. So if you were to suggest, Jim, a way to invest in building deep knowledge or on an initiative or something else that educators are implementing, what would it be?
Well, I think the first thing is you need to get clear on what it is that you're trying to accomplish. So if we take instructional coaches, as I was mentioning, there are certain skills coaches need to have. And there are beliefs. What are the beliefs that guide your actions? And so I would want to go into those beliefs. I would explore them. I'd want to talk about what's the behaviors that they look like. I want to give people a lot of time to reflect on them and discuss them in different contexts. But when it comes to skills, I would want them to watch themselves practice a skill over and over again, just like a hockey team working the breakout play where to get to a point where the kids know exactly where to be when they do the play. When we're learning skills, we have to practice it over and over again. It's not going to happen quickly. And then there's other things too, like knowledge and skills. So you need to understand how to gather data. So I would have plenty of opportunities for the coaches to practice watching teachers teach and gathering data and sharing the results so that they really feel competent and fluent. They're not just guessing at what the goal should be. They can see clearly what it is. And then in terms of strategies, that's what we call an instructional playbook, creating a playbook. To create that deep knowledge, we at the instructional coaching group, we've started working on this thing we call an IC system. So that's impact coaching system, but it's also an instructional coaching system. So that we work more with districts, not so much on let us come and do a workshop. Of course, we'll do that to give people awareness, but it's helping districts develop the system so they can have that deep knowledge. Because a coach who doesn't ask questions effectively, who doesn't listen, who doesn't understand their strategies, who isn't helpful at setting goals because they don't have the coaching cycle, who doesn't manage their time well, if they don't do the things coaches need to do, they're not going to succeed. And then they're going to feel bad about it. And it's not their fault. If they haven't had an opportunity to learn those skills, they might feel really disappointed in themselves. And that's not fair because they haven't had the chance to learn. We have to give people the chance to succeed. And that means we have to go deep. It's the kind of way I see it.
And then if they do give it a go and they don't have the right conditions in place, they get stuck in that cycle that you're talking about. And then maybe they'll quit and that initiative or that instructional coaching program may not be successful.
Mm-hmm.
That's really important. I want to highlight something you said that for all of our listeners, I think even myself and you, Jim, we've talked about this many times, is conditions are so important. So you mentioned it a few times, knowing when you're going to meet and learn, knowing who you'll meet and learn with, having that community and that community of practice, which you and I have talked about, it's so important to have people that you'll meet with to develop that deep knowledge so that you can go out and implement it the way it's meant to be. It's really good. Thank you so much. All right. Once our question and answer session has come to a close, we'll have an epilogue or a final note at the end of the show where I ask Jim two questions to wrap up our discussion before we sign off. Today's questions are, what advice or guidance do you have about nominal change for our administrators who are listening?
Well, I've got two things. One of them is I think that it's wise to go to people and ask them, how can you help me create a system that's going to lead to deep implementation, to quality implementation? And if people are only offering workshops and they're not working with you as a partner and helping you figure out what are your goals you're trying to accomplish, how can we build in systems of support and how can we, in the case of coaching, there are seven success factors that have to be in place for a coach to succeed, in our opinion. I mean, they need to be going after whatever it might be. If it's a differentiated instruction, there's sort of five core ideas that are really essential for differentiated instruction. You need to be working with people who help you identify those. Carol Tomlinson and I have talked about what that would look like. So I think when you set up professional development or professional learning for your setting, to take a systemic perspective and ask the people that you're working with, you're bringing people in from outside, are you going to help me create a system that makes sure this really happens? Second thing is your idea. I think they need to block off time to do the most important things that have to be done. And that means they have to say no to other things so they can say yes to the most important things. And so Near IL calls it time blocking, and you block off certain periods of time to work on it. But I think that's That's a really, really important thing too. You got to make the time to do it.
There's a question I love that's, if you say yes to this, what will you say no to?
Right.
So you're right. If you say yes to yet one more thing to add to an agenda, if you say yes to trying one more thing, what are you saying no to? And perhaps it's the deep knowledge, time to invest in learning with your team. So it's really important. Well, thank you. Establishing conditions is so essential to making change. I'm so glad you said that. Okay, I'm very curious, Jim. This must have some personal implications for you. So what experience do you have with the nominal change cycle, and how did you get out of it?
Well, when I started to do professional development, I was training people in this approach called the strategic instruction model. I went to Kansas for 5 days from Toronto. I got a mountain of overheads. And then people will invite me in periodically to do presentations. And I had so many slides. It was like death by overhead, you know, and literally I could watch people sort of shrink in their chairs. One time I presented, and it was free. I was just doing this because my colleague asked me to present, and they got so worn out by all my content that the leader said, you know, you've given us a lot to think about, and I think we need to keep thinking about it. And he like basically shut me down. It's embarrassing to look back. But what I realized is that even if I did the workshop extremely well, the workshop by itself wasn't going to make it work. And we had to keep going deeper and more effective. So coaching really grew out of a recognition that it's not really talk that happens, it's action. And if the knowledge isn't actionable, if we can't use it, then we have to keep going. And so that's been my focus of my life's work, has been how do we actually do it? And now we're looking at the system. How do we create this IC system so that people can really create systems where we get high quality implementation? It's happened in so many other ways too. You know, I'll just give you one more example, is that I wrote about the partnership principles back in 2006 based on my dissertation research. Partnership principles are about equality and choice and voice and dialogue. And I wasn't really living them out, even though I wrote the book. You know, equality is really about not interrupting. If I think you're just as important as me, I shouldn't interrupt. And equality is about not judging. And voice is about having the other person, valuing what the other person has to say, and really have an attitude of benevolence and not judging the other person. I mentioned that before. So as I've thought about the partnership principles, it's not just what I think. It has to really be manifested in my actions. And so in my own work, I've been nominal, even though I wrote the book. So I've had to learn about that too. And I'm still engaged in a process of learning about the partnership principles, how to be a better listener and a better questioner and more appreciative of the people I work with.
Well, thank you, Jim.
So what about you? What's your experience with nominal change?
I want to take you back to when I was a classroom teacher. I was teaching fourth grade and new writing curriculum hit the streets. It was popular and the thing to do. So we got our hands on the writing curriculum. It was handed out and I started implementing it. And at that time, it was a huge shift from what we were doing to this new approach. So we became very focused on getting the lesson right, getting the lesson of the writing for the day delivered properly according to these books that we were following. So we began to really hyper-focus on the lesson. And we, as in the grade level, the school, anyone who was teaching this, there were groups that would come together and create PowerPoints for the lessons. We were so focused. Not long after that is when I was invited to become an instructional coach. I left the classroom and was supporting the entire school as they all worked to implement this writing curriculum. And I realized that we were not doing the kit the way it was meant to be done. And I thought I was nailing it. I was in my classroom celebrating. We are getting through every lesson every single day. But I had false clarity, because what we weren't doing was every other piece of that program that was really essential to make the change stick for kids. So we were mastering one part, thinking we've got this. And there we were, really missing an essential part, which was everything else that came with that program. And I got out of that by sitting down. I had all six grade level kits in front of me of this curriculum. And I read every book, every page in every book, multiple nights. It took me multiple weeks, I'm sure, but I read them. So I invested in that deep knowledge. And it wasn't until I read your article that I thought that's how I got out of it. That's really how I emerged from that, a better coach for the teachers that I worked with, because I invested in the deep knowledge alone and until midnight most nights, but I did it. And that time really changed how we implemented that writing.
Yeah, it's hard to get the results an initiative is designed to get if you don't do it the way it's meant to be done. And that's not to say you have to do it exactly by the book the way it is. You have to do it in a way that works for that particular group of students. But if you're going to make modifications, you need to know what you're modifying before you make the modifications too.
That's right. And to remember that it's always about what's best for kids, not right. What's most convenient for adults.
Yep.
Well, Jim, thank you so much for our conversation today. I can't wait to reread the article, and everyone, you can find it too. So thank you for giving us this new piece of information, Jim.
Yes, it's going to be in Ed Leadership, and it's a column. And I've got a column every other month in Ed Leadership. That's what this article is on nominal change. The problem of nominal change, I think, is the title of the article.
The problem with nominal change. And I really enjoyed your phrase from this too shall pass. Yeah. That's a good one. Well, thanks, Jim, for our conversation.
Thanks, Jessica. It's a pleasure.
If you found today's episode helpful, it would help us if you liked or followed the podcast. You can also leave us a rating or a comment so we can continue creating meaningful content just for you. Thank you. And until next time, go forth and lead great coaching conversations.